2021 is the year of the health and care worker, as designated by the World Health Organization. Women make up 70% of the global health workforce, and 80% of those women are nurses and midwives. Well-trained midwives can provide 87% of all sexual, reproductive, and maternal health services. Indigenous midwifery provides quality care, as well as culturally appropriate care to Indigenous women and their communities. I'm Sarah Barnes, and you're listening to Friday Podcasts, hosted by the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program and Maternal Health Initiative. Today, we bring you the third podcast in our three-part series featuring Indigenous midwives from around the world. This series has been made possible with the generous support of the International Confederation of Midwives and UNFPA. On today's podcast, I had the pleasure of speaking with Mel Briggs, a First Nations midwife practicing in New South Wales, Australia. Mel, a descendant of the Dharawal and Gumbangir people, is a midwife at Waminda, the South Coast Women's Health and Welfare Aboriginal Corporation. Mel has been a practicing midwife for over a decade, has her bachelor's in midwifery, and recently completed her master's of primary maternity care, making her the first Aboriginal woman in New South Wales and one of only two Aboriginal women nationally to have achieved this distinction. Mel is leading the development of the Minga Gajaga midwifery group practice, and she's also leading Birthing on Country, which is a project to establish a freestanding birth center, providing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women with a culturally safe place to birth on the South Coast. All right, well, good morning. Good evening to you. We're really excited to speak with you today, Mel, and learn about your personal journey and that of other First Nations midwives in Australia. So thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Sarah. I'm very excited.
Of course. So the first thing I think I'd like to hear a little bit about is your own personal path to becoming a midwife, particularly a midwife who works primarily with other First Nations women and families.
Yeah, so I guess my path started, well, I think the path to become a midwife predates my existence. When I birthed my second child, my father had told me that my great-grandmother was a midwife and used to birth women out on country, out in Northern Rivers, New South Wales. And then, you know, sort of thinking back, I was working in a really nice job at Qantas and watched the birth of my godson, which was an amazing birth experience. And I think, you know, that led me to the midwifery path and then acknowledging it a few years later as to why that path was chosen, my father telling me about my great-grandmother. And whilst I was studying at university, really immersing myself in, you know, the disparities in our people, and but also acknowledging the strengths and, you know, still living in a colonised world and as the strongest and oldest living culture on the planet. I think that's pretty amazing. And I would work out in community with my family and my elders and my aunties and my sisters. And, you know, that's what I'm meant to do. That's where I'm meant to be. So a path has been chosen for me, and that's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing, caring for women and family and trying to create really healthy, chunky, fat babies. Help that process.
Yes.
Not create them. The mum's doing that, but I'm just sort of helping the process.
And can you speak a little bit about what the overall landscape of midwifery is in Australia, but particularly looking at First Nations midwives?
Yeah, knowing the landscape, when you look at First Nations midwifery in Australia, it was never a written form of education, and nor was it a requirement to be a certified birthing midwife. It was sort of our culture is life. Like, it's First Nations people of Australia hold the oldest bloodline and the oldest living culture on the planet. Our people have birthed since time immemorial and hold this practice, this birthing practice, as sacred. So to be with women on country is a gift and a privilege. And midwifery, it happened prior to colonisation. And, you know, historian Professor Odette Best has done some research on the history of Aboriginal midwifery in Australia, and that we were never allowed to be educated. We were controlled, we were oppressed. And, you know, there's, I think it was 1950s where we were allowed to train. So back in those days, the nurses and the midwives would stay on the hospital grounds, and they'd be trained there and they'd have their education there. But the midwives, the Aboriginal midwife, she wasn't allowed to stay in the same place as all the other midwives. She had to be placed somewhere else. So she was segregated, and she'd done training in the mainstream facility and segregated again. And it was really, it must have been a horrible time, I could imagine. But that in itself describes the barriers that the history of Aboriginal midwifery since colonisation has faced, is segregation, control, oppression. You can't practice your culture in our mainstream services. You have to practice westernised medical obstetric models. So culture was taken away from us, and Aboriginal midwifery practices were also taken at the same time. So there's just over 300 Aboriginal midwives today in the country, and we have a national body called the Congress of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Nurses and Midwives, and is chaired by Professor Royanne West. And they've just recently released their annual report, and basically just over 300 Aboriginal midwives. They're also dual accredited too. So, you know, they're not only practicing midwifery, they're also practicing nursing. And then, you know, another section of those are also diluted into non-clinical. So they're always, you know, moving up into that political space. Yeah, just taken out of clinical, on the ground, working with women, which is, you know, what we all want to do. But sometimes we also need that voice up there that sort of, in highlights the hard work that we're doing down on the ground. So that also is a massive barrier, because there's just not enough of us. You know, when compared to the number of nurses and midwives in the country, there's around 30,000 collectively. And that's just the ratio for an Aboriginal midwife to woman is very, very bad. So it's not the best outcome, but we're getting there. We have made improvements, and you know, there's a lot of lobbying from CATSINM, which is the Congress of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Nurses and Midwives. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are really pushing for those barriers to be broken down, and implementation of having seats and positions in universities so we can get more Aboriginal students in university, and also having mentoring for those Aboriginal students just to feel safe in that space, because the hospitals is not, it's not a culturally safe space. We're going into, like I said before, it's a Western medicalised obstetric model. There's no culture in that. It's not our culture. So it's pretty hard to fathom that, but we're getting there. The number of midwives is increasing, and we've got some beautiful student Aboriginal midwives coming through, and the future's looking great.
Mel, I read that you are one of only two Aboriginal midwives in the entire country who are licensed to practice privately. What does this distinction mean exactly?
So it's Medicare-endorsed private practicing midwife. So it's basically the right to prescribe and request routine pathology and ultrasounds during pregnancy, prescribing medications in pregnancy, related to pregnancy, postpartum, up to 6 weeks, you know, like there's that. And also being able to claim through the government to fund that consult. So that's basically what we can do as a private practicing midwife is that we can claim through our government to pay us individually to provide the care in community. So there's only two Aboriginal midwives in the country that can do that at the moment.
It's stupid. Why is that?
It's so hard. It's the process. So you have to have so many hours of midwifery service. You basically have to have postgraduate degree, do a prescribing and a prescribing course. Like there's a lot of steps. And mm-hmm. when you're already a practicing midwife and immersed in full-time work, the ability to do extra study plus do an application that's huge, like you have to have 5 years or 3 years of evidence of CPD, and it's just this huge process. And the only way that I was able to do it is working where I am now, because they supported me to do that. And I don't see any other service supporting midwives to do that. It's a hard process. So
No, it definitely makes sense, but it seems wild that there's only two of you. There's been a lot of progress, it sounds like, but there's more to go.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot more to go.
Are there particular things, Mel, that you think have helped to start increasing more First Nations midwives?
Yeah, so universities are allocating positions at universities for Aboriginal women or men to enroll, and there's also linking, sort of bridging services, Aboriginal-led services that within universities that support Indigenous students. And there's also scholarships, and universities are really good at supporting Aboriginal students in that space, and mentoring. And also the universities are now looking at ways to increase and improve engagement of Indigenous students. So linking in with Aboriginal community-controlled health organisations, which is basically it's Aboriginal-led models of care in community. And so universities are coming and saying, we'd like our students to come to you because they will feel nurtured, and they will they'll thrive because they have that cultural safety, they have that network of strong Aboriginal people in community that they can come back to and say, I did this in the hospital today and it made me feel this way. And then they come back into a safe space, and that's okay to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And we always push back with that stuff. So it's we're really trying with that. So, and having international and national research that supports the importance of having an Aboriginal midwife looking after Aboriginal families during pregnancy and early parenting, that you just can't beat that stuff. Like it's more than just clinical care. It's cultural. It's connection to country. It's connection to land. It's all of those things that are important to the woman and family, kinship, babies. It's so important. So all the evidence is there, and we just need to encourage Aboriginal women or men to become midwives to care for women out on country.
Yeah. Yeah. And are you finding that most of the women and families that you're supporting are having births at home, or are they having to go to hospital?
Yeah. So colonization and the introduction of Western foods such as sugar, wheat, fat, like lard, and all of these, the introduction of rations, these things have made our people historically unwell, and that's created a lot of chronic disease, heart disease, asthma, obesity, all of these horrible, horrible diseases. And you know, a lot of our people are really sick, so, but there's a lot that are also really well. Mm-hmm. But for those women who we care for, there's, and you know, when you look at the medical model, it's not the women's fault that these things have happened to them. It's the society and it's the models that have done this. We're looking at women obstetrically and clinically, and they're seen as unwell, and they're high risk, or they've got this, they can't birth at home, their BMI is over 40, or there's things that we'll always find. So a lot of the women that we care for have to birth in a hospital because they're seen as high risk. So if we do have a woman who is well and is growing a beautifully healthy and well baby, which we try to do with all of our mums try to do, is that we can offer them to birth at home, but it's not an opportunity from where I'm working at the moment to be able to provide that, but we're getting there. So the programs that we provide in community is taking it back to traditional lifestyles and medicine, and really taking it back and saying, you know, what did our old people eat? What did they do? They hunted and they gathered and they were healthy and fit and well. And let's go back to that. Let's just do that and eat well. And then the next generation will have a generation of those women who will be able to birth at home and be healthy and well. And yeah, I feel like a lot of the women now can, but I think the next generation will.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So then do you accompany women to a hospital, and are there any restrictions there? Can you go and have the same ceremonies and traditional type of birth that you might have at home? How does that work?
Yeah, so women who we do support the women, we're a support person in the hospital at the moment. We don't have visiting rights. So we're trying to work on that as so that we're the lead midwife in the birthing space when the woman goes into birth at the hospital. So we're working on that at the moment. But as it is now, we're seen as a support person. And the cultural practices take place before they enter the hospital.
Okay.
We take them out on country and we do beautiful ceremony and really enable the woman to feel herself and feel her space and just really connect to her mind and her body and her baby. And it's actually quite an amazing thing to do. And when we're in that space, the women are actually healing so that they can birth peacefully and yes, calmly. And that gives them strength going into a place where they're going to be controlled. And some of the time I'm there and I'm able to try and hold that space with her or for her. And a lot of the times I'm not able to because, you know, you can only, at the moment with this pandemic, you can only have two people in the room with you. And even before then, there was still only two people allowed in the room because that's a hospital, you know, like, and that's their policy. And we just have to go with whatever they say when we're in their space, I guess. And then when they come home, we do a lot of practices, a lot of cultural practices with our mums, our new mums and our new babies. And yeah, it's pretty special. And reviving culture, I guess, is what we're doing, because it's healing, and it's just taking it back, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Mel, you said that when you're in the hospital setting, you're a support person. Is that true of all midwives? Is midwifery seen in Australia as a support and not a lead?
No, it's because I don't work in a hospital. I work out in community. And when I go with the women to the hospital, I'm not an employee of the hospital. So I'm not seen as the lead midwife. The midwife at the hospital is seen as the lead. But we get this really lovely midwives there. And, you know, we sort of grab hold of them once when we can, because they know where we're coming from.
That's great. And can you share maybe a personal anecdote or a story of a birth that had an impact on you? I'm not sure they all have had an impact on you.
Just recently, I looked after a mum in her pregnancy. So I call it Binjalan. So in our language, it's called Binjalan, which means pregnant. So in her Binjalan, there was a lot of healing and a lot of talking about her birth and preparation for that. And she just knew how it was going to be. She literally told me what the weather was going to be like on the day, how the birth was going to be, what her baby looked like when she came out. And she just knew. And we went into the labor room and you know, we shared culture with the midwives. So we done an Oka ceremony with the midwives that were there and shared our knowledge, which was really nice, which made everybody a part of that ceremony. And then we got to a point in her labor where she said, no, something's not right. I don't feel right. And she just looked at me like she didn't even need to say it. It just, you could just see the look on her face. And I just went, yeah, no, let's just call it. And then we got prepared for a cesarean section. And she was strong in that decision, which was really empowering for her. And then we all went into the theatres and she's laying there. She's very strong, very, very strong Indigenous woman and strong in her culture. She holds a lot and she holds her space really, really well. Anyway, so she's laying there and she says to all the theatre staff, when my baby comes out, do not speak. My baby will hear language as its first words and they will be my words. And then the theatre staff, they said, oh, what's the word? And she said, Walawani. So the nurse goes, oh, how do I spell that, Mel? And I told her how I spell. I said, just spell it how it sounds. Anyway, so she's written it up on the board. And then when she came out, the mum and I both said, Walawani. And then everybody in the theatre just erupted. Like it was like a big celebration. It was like you wouldn't even imagine seeing it or hearing it. But everybody just sort of got so excited and it was like a big party. And and then everybody just started crying. It was like, oh, my goodness, this is really intense. But it was just nice that we included them in old ways, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's how it should be. And, yeah, it was a nice birth experience. It was a very cultural birth experience, even though we needed to use an obstetric medical clinical intervention, it was still respecting culture, and that's what needs to happen. So I think if we're respectful in both places, it can work. So that's reviving culture.
Yeah, it sounds beautiful and respectful.
Yeah, it was a pretty special day. Yeah, it's nice.
That's incredible. Thank you for sharing that story with me. So you touched a little bit on the future of midwifery in Australia, you know, talking about education and other things, but I also am curious, you talk a lot about, you know, the reviving of the culture, but also the strong women in your community.
Yeah.
How do you see those things connecting and helping for this revival within your community and the increase of using First Nations midwives and midwifery?
Well, you know, when you look at the foundation of community, it's women. Women are the core. They're the nucleus of keeping things together. That's we just keep it together. And in the organisation that I work for, which is called Wabinda, it's all women and we're all from country and we all share the same values and we're just one big family, I guess. And, you know, we hold culture and women at the core of everything that we do. And the women that are coming through and having babies now, they're our future. You know, if we're creating healthy and well babies now in pregnancy, then they're going to grow and thrive like non-Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids in the country. They're going to thrive just as much, and they're going to be equal to, if not better, you know, health outcomes. It's, mm-hmm. you know, we're dying 10 years younger than our white brothers and sisters. It's not, well, how is that fair? We're in our organisation, we're creating a healthy community. So if you look at social determinants of health, you know, if you're educated, if you're healthy and well, you get an education and you're more likely to get a job and you're more likely to be self-sufficient in life. Like you're empowering yourself, you're enabling yourself to thrive. So yeah, I think, you know, healthy pregnancy is a good foundation for a good start to life for any child. And if that occurs, and then, you know, first 2 years of life is also crucial for that growth and development. If we're creating that in the programs that we do now at Wominda, then we're going to have a beautiful generation of healthy people. You know, and if they're educated, they will then maybe want to do midwifery. And, you know, we've got some beautiful young women now who are really looking into that space, or even Aboriginal health practitioners. So we've got Aboriginal health practitioners that don't specialise in midwifery care, but they can identify issues in the clinical space. And you know, they might not want to be a midwife now, but I'll talk to them enough and they'll want to be in the next few years.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, like, the future is looking good. We've got some really beautiful, healthy generation of people coming through now, and it's you know, it's taken a very long time, 230 years, in fact. We've been controlled and oppressed for a very long time. I just feel like it's time. It's time for our people to thrive and to be equal. That's what I reckon.
I reckon the same, and I think that's an amazing way to end this podcast. Mel, it's been such a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this edition of Friday Podcast, the third in our series with Indigenous midwives. To learn more on these topics, find us on the .mom column on newsecuritybeat.org, or follow us on Twitter at @Wilson_MHI. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe to Friday Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts.